Good morning, everybody. I am very excited to welcome you to today's episode of Coffee with Susie. I'm extremely excited to have Dr. Sonia Osqui here with me, the Vice President of Biosimilars from Cardinal. The topic today will be biosimilars, and I am very excited to share this topic because I think it is a topic that is very important for pharmacists, and we are talking about it, but maybe not even talking about it enough. And I see comments coming through and questions coming through. There was actually a survey of retail pharmacists that was done by Cardinal Health in 2021 that found that only 19% of pharmacists were familiar with the interchangeability designation and 64% were somewhat familiar. So today talking about biosimilars is going to be very important to pharmacists. And I believe next year will be a critical year since there are 7 approved medications, biosimilars, just for the one, adalimumab is the number one selling drug of all time. And there are 7 approved products expected to launch. I believe the first one is going to launch in January. And basically this launch is going to be very interesting because the purpose is going to allow pharmacist substitution depending upon state laws. So welcome today, Sonia. I'm super excited to have you. Why don't you introduce yourselves to everyone for those who do not know who you are, but I believe everyone watching probably knows who you are.
Oh, I don't know, but thank you for having me on, and I have my coffee as well. So we're having coffee together. So I'm Sonia Osqui, and like you said, I'm Vice President of Biosimilars here at Cardinal Health. So I lead our cross-organizational biosimilar strategy. And so what that means is I get to look across all our organization, our enterprise, and our different businesses and capabilities, and identify ways to leverage those to ultimately maximize the value of biosimilars on behalf of the various stakeholders we work with. And our stakeholders work with life science companies, physicians, pharmacists, payers, and patients. So we really are kind of at the intersection of healthcare delivery within Cardinal Health. So I'm a pharmacist by training. I did a pharmacy school at Belmont University College of Pharmacy. Then I did PGY1 and PGY2 residencies in health system pharmacy administration, and went through the journey of, you know, first practicing in a health system. Then I went to Premier to create and lead a biosimilar strategy for that organization around the time we had our first biosimilar approved in the US. And then have now been at Cardinal for about 2 years now in this role. So I've been kind of part of this biosimilar journey since the very beginning in the US. And like you, this is an area that I'm very passionate about and believe is critical, especially for pharmacy professionals that are seeking to support these products and patients on these products moving forward.
Definitely. You are the leader. When I think of biosimilars, I know many pharmacists listening today will think of your name as well. So I'm so excited that you're here to share this. For those listening, though, who aren't familiar with biosimilars, can you just kind of give a basic definition as to what a biosimilar is and maybe a little bit more background about how they came about?
Yeah, for sure. So biosimilars are biologic treatments that are highly similar to existing FDA-approved biologics. So you could think of this in terms of the relationship of a brand to generic that we all know very well. This is the same concept in terms of a relationship when it comes to biologic medications. The reason why we don't call them generics is that biologics just by nature overall are made from living cells. So there's always inherent variability, even batch to batch of the same biologic. So as you try to essentially replicate it or make a copy of it or a generic version, the best you could do is create a highly similar version of that biologic treatment. So that's where that terminology comes from. This really came about in the US under the ACA when it was established under the Biologics Price Competition Innovation Act. It was implemented and went live in 2010. And this created an approval pathway through the FDA for biosimilars to come to market for those biologics that have been established on the market, the brand biologics, which many of the names we know commonly, like you mentioned, adalimumab with Humira, Rituxan, Avastin. I mean, these are common big hitter drugs that are used. So this really, through the creation of this pathway for biosimilars to enter the market, it really helped create this channel of bringing more competition for some of the costliest treatment options we have.
And what do you think the awareness level or understanding of life science professionals or healthcare professionals is around biosimilars?
We've done a lot of market research on this, and really over the years at Cardinal Health, we've actually done market research since 2015, since we had the first biosimilar in the market. So it's been cool to see the trends and perceptions and awareness over time. And the one thing I could say is that we really can't generalize biosimilar experiences, perspectives, or opinions in the US. It varies based on the product type, therapeutic area, sometimes site of care, reimbursement model. So I would say in oncology, I would really say in oncology, we're there. Oncology is doing, there's strong adoption with biosimilars. They're the most experienced, and so that's the ones that we've had on the market thus far and the most biosimilars with oncology indications. So we see strong adoption and levels of comfort amongst oncologists, clinical pharmacists that work in oncology. As an example, the three therapeutic oncology biosimilars have exceeded 60% market share in the US. So we see a lot of comfort when it comes to biosimilars in oncology. It's not to say it's the same when we look at other areas like rheumatology, where there's still barriers to adoption and greater hesitation, especially with switching patients to a biosimilar. And then you look at the newer therapeutic areas like ophthalmology, where we're going to anticipate to have our first ophthalmology biosimilar on the market this summer. So you're getting in the retina space, and market research has continued to show that there's quite a bit of hesitation and lack of familiarity with these products, which kind of makes sense because it's the next new area and it's new exposure for that stakeholder group as well.
No, definitely. What role do you think pharmacists play though in, you know, facilitating the adoption of biosimilars or really just in biosimilars in general?
Yeah, I'm a huge, huge advocate, just in general, the pharmacy profession. Of course, I'm biased. We're both probably biased, but pharmacists are the medication experts. So when it comes to addressing some of these barriers and challenges and knowledge gaps when it comes to biosimilars, I mean, I can't think of a better stakeholder group to drive those efforts and champion those efforts than pharmacists. And thus far, we've had majority of the biosimilars on the market fall under the medical benefit. So provider administered infused products, mainly like we talked about in oncology with some of rheumatology. And pharmacists have been playing a key role in the adoption of those, especially in those sites of care where pharmacists have presence, like health systems and different provider offices where pharmacists participate. So we often hear, we do a lot of knowledge sharing amongst the networks we work with here at Cardinal. And there's always common themes that those institutions that have best practices or have had strong adoption and supported patient access to these products, pharmacists are often leading or championing the process. So they're key when it comes to educating not just the physicians of pharmacists and other team members they work with, but of course, patients. And when it comes to counseling, building clinical comfort, supporting the monitoring, adherence, compliance with the medications, pharmacovigilance activities. I mean, you think about the strengths of what a pharmacist does, and it's just great to have those skills applied as we have more biosimilars come to market. And we're going to continue to see this evolve. We're starting to get into the new phase of biosimilars where we're going to have more retail presence and retail pharmacies like insulins we now have. Adalimumab is going to be huge. So we're going to have an even expanded role of pharmacists because more of them will be more involved. So we'll have retail pharmacists, health systems, and others be able to support the patient journey with these products.
Definitely. So I can see the role expanding for the pharmacists and even education opportunities as well, because I think a lot of pharmacists might have questions in different areas. Tell us what the Accreditation Council for Medical Affairs or ACMA is doing when it comes to increasing education about biosimilars in the healthcare ecosystem.
Yeah, we're absolutely thrilled about this initiative by ACMA, in which we fully support. And this is aimed at tackling a lot of the challenges and the misinformation or knowledge gaps out there when it comes to biosimilars. And this is a very real challenge and barrier, so much so that even Congress passed a bipartisan bill last year that was called the Advancing Education on Biosimilars Act of 2021. So it's pretty straightforward, self-explanatory, but that was intended to put enhanced efforts around education around these products to support the adoption and market success of having healthy competition in the US market. So this initiative with ACMA is essentially serving as an extension of those efforts to help set the bar and help create credentialing programs that we can have a broader network of experts in this space that could support the education process with peers, physicians, providers, payers, patients, I mean, all the different stakeholder groups. And so I'm very excited about it because it really, thus far, there hasn't even been a way to understand whether an individual has been exposed or has the resources or tools to be qualified to educate or be an expert and help elevate the broader population with understanding these products. So this is a fantastic initiative that we're excited to have come to fruition and have as many biosimilar and biologic experts as possible.
Definitely, because I think this is just going to help with the change that's happening in the healthcare system with the biologics. You talked a little bit about misconceptions and, you know, that there might be misconceptions out there. What misconceptions do you think that many people might have, you know, regarding interchangeability? Specifically, even in my introduction, I saw that there were 7 approved adalimumab, and I always say the word wrong, so excuse me, biosimilars, but they're, you know, that are expected to launch, but interchangeability was only granted to 1. So what misconceptions are around related to interchangeability?
It's a great question. So foundationally, interchangeability is a regulatory designation by the FDA. And what it allows is automatic substitution at the pharmacy level. So you think about brands and generics, how pharmacists routinely will automatically substitute those products. The FDA, in order to grant interchangeability, they put out guidance, and generally speaking, that would require additional submission of data, where you would have a biosimilar biologic, you do a study where you switch back and forth at least three times to show no differences in outcomes. So the designation is granted through the submission of additional data. And it's a regulatory designation. And I'm emphasizing those 2 key points because the misperceptions out there that still remain when it comes to interchangeability is that it may have a clinical meaning, which it does not. A interchangeable biosimilar is not clinically superior to one that does not have interchangeability designation. It is truly a regulatory designation. In fact, US is the only country that has it as a regulatory designation. So a lot of debate around this designation occurs, and quite frankly, because of the misinformation associated with it. So if we look at the adalimumabs, one of the candidates, to your point, achieved interchangeability designation, was granted that designation by the FDA. I don't expect it to be the last one. There's multiple other candidates seeking interchangeability designation. So this is going to be a very interesting year next year, where we have some that are interchangeable, some that are not, by an FDA regulatory standpoint. But to your point, tackling the misinformation and making sure all stakeholders fully understand what that designation means, so that it does not create barriers for broader adoption and acceptance of these products, is going to be critical. And again, that is why programs like the ACMA is going to help set that bar and be the kind of the book of truth and the program of truth to help reveal and support our stakeholders when navigating these products.
Oh, amazing. Thank you. I know I've learned so much during this interview already, just asking you all these questions. I feel like I'm learning a lot, even related to the Congress law. I'm just, you know, I'm like, oh, I need to go look into this. But this is great. So tell me a little bit more about your journey. So I know that you talked about, you know, you did residency and you did 2 residencies. And did you know that you were going to be where you're practicing now? You know, did you know, you know, as a student? And tell me a little bit more about how you got to where you are today.
Oh, goodness. Well, no, I did not think that I would be doing what I'm doing today when I was in pharmacy school. I mean, and I hope others know there's more options out there, but I would say earlier in pharmacy school, I really thought it was you go retail or you go hospital. And those were the 2 big buckets of options to become a pharmacist. And I remember at the time saying, I fully value all those roles, both those roles, and they're critical to the success of healthcare delivery in the US, but it just never really ignited the passion in me for areas that I wanted to explore. And it was later in my pharmacy school program where, you know, you do rotations and you have different exposures. And I'm so grateful for the experience I had, because that's when I was exposed to more of broader health system and pharmacy administration type of roles. And I remember thinking, oh, like, this is a thing, like I could do, this is fantastic. So that really opened up my eyes to more things that pharmacists could do, because in those types of settings, you're doing more strategic efforts to support pharmacists and other stakeholders to maximize patient outcomes on treatments and drive broader initiatives that could impact mass groups of healthcare providers. Which always excited me. And then in that role, you work with so many different stakeholders and the type of pharmacy administration roles, from pharmaceutical companies, wholesalers, GPOs, providers. So I was always excited by being able to interact with different influencers on patient delivery. So that's what triggered the interest in the path that I took. And then when biosimilars were first getting developed and coming to market in the US, I quickly became passionate about it, because you could easily see any top drug expenditure list is basically consumed by biologics. And these are products that have had no competition for over a decade, sometimes over two decades in the US, and patients are often burdened by the cost of these products. So to have now a pathway to bring biosimilars competition that could help lower costs and enhance patient affordability and accessibility of these critical treatments. So between the combination of, I would say, kind of untraditional paths and these new products that could really make a difference, kind of led me on this journey to where I am today.
Amazing. Amazing. I know so many people are listening to you are inspired. So
that's nice.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Before we end every episode, I do ask our guests to share a photo, and it could be a personal photo, or, you know, some people have shown professional photos. Someone, I remember one person even showed a solar eclipse. So many, wow, many interesting things we get to see today. And I wanted to ask you to describe the photo that you are sharing today with everyone.
Yeah, well, this was I mentioned this to you earlier. It was funny because when we were talking about sharing a photo, and I was like, oh yes, let me find a photo of me and my children. And then I realized I had to do like Mission Impossible to find a picture of just me and my children, plenty of my husband and our children. Let me just throw that out there. So I'm like, okay, so that triggered the thought that we have got to step up our game of like, take pictures of me and our kids.
No, I could so relate. Even yesterday, it was Memorial Day. I was the one videoing everyone, like,
yeah,
doing
right?
everything and like taking photos. And at the end of the night, I'm like, I don't think I have any photos. Like, I didn't exist today. Like, I was not there.
Yeah. That's so funny. And this is a true story. My husband was like, no, we took one the other day. And he's like, look, I was like, which one are you talking about? And this is not a joke. And you all will probably appreciate this too. I was like, which one are you talking about? I was like, send it to me. And so he sent it. And this is like right after I woke up, came down to like messy clothes. And like, I look awful. I'm like, hang on, this is the picture you said that I have with the kids that would be good to share beyond
exactly,
us.
Exactly. Like, exactly. That's who, yeah. I just like, I woke up and I'm like, yeah.
I'm like, when I actually do my hair and makeup, please take pictures of me with our kids. But so the picture is of me and my two munchkins. I know. So they're now 7 and 3 years old. And it was after a day of work. And I think I was just laying down tired and they came laying on me. And it's those moments where you're just so tired, but then you get those brief moments of snuggles before it gets crazy again. So I figured I'd share that because we never know what's going on in people's lives outside of work. And there's everybody has so much on their plates and just life demand. And but it's little moments like that that make it all special.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. Beautiful. Well, thank you so much. If anyone wanted to reach you or had questions, where can they find you?
I'd say the best way is probably through LinkedIn. I'm pretty active on there and monitor it, but love to connect. I always love to learn from others as well and support pharmacists, pharmacy profession, you know, future pharmacists and beyond. So please do feel free to connect.
Thanks so much. Thanks again, Sonia.
Thank you, Susie.